Patty. We've been studying Genesis. We've been starting sort of at the beginning and creation and God's promises to Abram. And he's left his home in Ur of the Chaldees, and he traveled to a place called Haran. And he was there for a while, and then he and his wife Sarai have now traveled to Canaan, where God promised that he would multiply his seed and make him a great nation, and that he would be a blessing to all peoples. But so far, Sarai, his wife, can't have children. They have no children, so it's hard to see how the whole great nation thing is going to work out. And they've been in Canaan for 10 years now, and Sarai's not any more pregnant than she was 10 years ago. And so as Ron taught last week, Abram was getting a little impatient, and so the Lord came to him again and said, yes, it will be from you. It will be from your body. It won't be your servant. I will give you a child. But he didn't say who the mother was going to be, or mothers. He didn't say anything about the women. This happens sometimes. And so at some point, Sarai starts to think, this isn't working out for me. Right? And she wonders that maybe we need to be a little bit more creative in helping God find a solution to this being a great nation thing. So she does something that in that time was fairly culturally appropriate, which is to have Abram take a second wife, someone that could give her children. So Gail's going to help us here.
Now, Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian slave girl named Hagar. And Sarai said to Abram, look, pray, the Lord has kept me from bearing children. Pray, come to bed with my slave girl. Perhaps I shall be built up through her. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian, her slave girl, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and she gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife.
With whom do our sympathies lie? This particular ancient Hebrew text kind of leaves it open for us. Who is the main character that we will identify with? Was Sarai? This is the first time we've heard her voice. She's followed her husband from Ur to Haran to Canaan. She dwells in a land that they do not own. She's left her mother, her sisters, her sister-in-law, everyone she knew, behind. But nothing has happened yet. There's no fulfillment of the promise. She went along with Abram's plan to when they went to Egypt to say, I'm his sister. And she went into Pharaoh's household, not knowing whether she was going to come out again or she'd be stuck there. She wasn't. And her beauty, which must have been considerable because Abram was sure the Egyptians would kill him in order to take her as a wife, hasn't necessarily been an asset. She has wealth. She has flocks and camels and slaves and all kinds of things. And yet, it's not really hers. If Abram dies, it goes to his servant at this point, not to her. Without a son, she doesn't really have anything. She is the mistress of the household, but that could change at any point. She doesn't have any security. Beauty, wealth, power were not enough. The Lord has kept me from bearing children, she said. God's promises to her husband Abram that his biological seed would be like the stars and would possess the land doesn't seem to apply to her. It seems like yes to Abram, no to Sarai. 10 years is a long time, with or without fertility specialists, and apparently the biological clock had already been invented. She knew it wasn't happening. Perhaps I shall be built up through her. Sarai is feeling broken down, not built up. Does that ever happen to us? When the people around us seem to be hearing from the Lord, getting reassurances of the promise, but we don't see anything, we start to think, maybe I should do something different. Maybe I need to help God make these promises come true. Or do we feel for Abram? Despite all that he's given his wife, he's quite wealthy. She is obviously unhappy. Despite God's promises, nothing is coming to pass. He's just trying to listen to his wife, give the guy a break, to facilitate God's promises coming to pass. And traditionally, Abraham gets to look like the good guy, doing what his wife asks of him. He is the patriarch, after all, the one who believed God's promises, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Belief's a lot easier when you hear God and you see God and God speaks to you by name. It's a little harder when you're working on hearsay. Or do we identify with Hagar? Though she is a native of the most powerful empire on earth, she has been given or purchased as a slave and then taken away from her homeland. She has no kinship, no mother, no father, no one to protect her. She is at the mercy or lack thereof of her owners. She has no choice, no voice. She gets no husband of her own, but rather is given as the second wife to an 85-year-old man who is clearly only trying to keep his first wife happy. In fact, the text names Hagar, but Sarai only refers to her as the slave girl. And it's a little surprising that the text calls her his wife. Many translators call it concubine, although it clearly says wife in the text. So let's hear what happens next.
And he came to bed with Hagar, and she conceived. And she saw that she had conceived, and her mistress seemed slight in her eyes. And Sarai said to Abram, "This outrage is against me because of you. I myself put my slave girl in your embrace, and when she saw she had conceived, I became slight in her eyes. Let the Lord judge between you and me." And Abram said to Sarai, "Look, your slave girl is in your hands. Do whatever you think is right."
Apparently, translating Sarai's first indignant outcry is rather difficult. This outrage against me is because of you, expresses some of the emotion. Although another translation says, "My wrong be upon thee." Ouch. Marriage is hard. Family life is difficult. What does it mean to become slight in someone else's eyes? Someone who you thought perhaps would build you up, would give you sons, but instead you have become less before them. Her sonlessness has become more pointed and painful. Sarai's hopes for a creative solution have been dashed. Rather than building her up, this is tearing her home apart. What to do? Perhaps we feel for Abram, "I was just doing what she asked me to." He doesn't shift loyalties. He carefully maintains that Hagar is the slave girl, your slave girl, in your hands, not my hands, as if he is washing his hands of the whole affair, so to speak. Does he know that he made a mistake? That if the Lord judges between him and Sarai, he might come out the guilty party? And when he says, "Do whatever you think is right," it seems like kind of a cop-out. How well did it work out at the beginning of this drama to do what Sarah thought was a good thing? Don't you think it might be time to change course and maybe weigh in on what's right? Because Sarai's vision seems clouded by pain and jealousy. Saying, "I'm just going to stay out of it," seems like piling one bad decision on another, absolving oneself of the responsibility and consequences. I think sometimes of how much easier this is to do rather than entering into the difficult process of negotiating, collaborating, and jointly seeking a course of action. Discerning what is right together takes time and energy and commitment, And it would probably mean enduring some anger and frustration from Sarai in the process to be willing to really hear her and stay committed to the conversation. I wonder how many times I, too, would rather wash my hands of a decision and say, see how it works out for you, rather than going through the difficult work of figuring out the emotions and the needs and collaborating together. Because on her own, Sarai wasn't able to make the best decision, as any kid who's heard about bullying at school will tell you.
And Sarai harassed her, and she fled from her. And the Lord's messenger found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, slave girl of Sarai, where have you come from, and where are you going? And she said, from Sarai, my mistress, I'm fleeing. And the Lord's messenger said to her, return to your mistress and suffer harassment at her hand.
So I have to say that initially I'm not that thrilled with Yahweh if we pause here. It looks like God is just sending her back to get abused, which doesn't seem that nice. And so we need to look at what else is happening here. Hagar runs away, but is the Lord's messenger who goes to find her and calls her first by name and then by status. She might be a slave girl, but God knows her name, and God is the one who is searching for her. Where have you come from, and where are you going? A sermon I read pointed out that Hagar only answers the first part, where she's come from, not where she's going, because Hagar doesn't see a future for herself. She knows her past, but not her future. Alone in the wilderness, is there a future for a runaway pregnant slave girl? Or would she rather just die than endure Sarai's mistreatment? Apparently, she sees no future, only suffering. There are not very many times in Scripture when God speaks or sends a messenger directly to a woman. The last time God spoke to a woman, it was Eve. So far, he hasn't spoken to Sarah yet. This is the tale of the Hebrews, written down much later after enslavement in Egypt. Sarah is the matriarch. She is the wife and mother of promise. Can we imagine the strangeness that the hero and mother of the people has thus far been left out of the communication with God, and instead clearly portrayed as abusing her slave girl, who she put in the position to begin with? It's not an ordinary hero tale. The characters are flawed, and the expected enemies take strangely center stage speaking roles. It hasn't been cleaned up for the Disney version. It's real. So as we listen for the nameless being named and the invisible being seen, listen for the echoes of past and future promises, promises that the Lord is giving to Hagar, the escaping Egyptian slave girl.
And the Lord's messenger said to her, I will surely multiply your seed, and it will be beyond all counting. And the Lord's messenger said to her, look, you have conceived, and you will bear a son, and you will call his name Ishmael, for the Lord has heeded your suffering. And he will be a wild ass of a man, his hand against all and the hand of all against him. He will encamp in despite of all his kin.
The blessing to Hagar that the Lord will multiply her seed beyond all counting echoes God's promise to Abram. It was kind of unusual to think of women having seed. The precursor, so to speak, of this is when the Lord speaks to, in Genesis 3, that there will be enmity between the seed of the woman and the serpent. I'm not really sure women get much seed after that. If you find it, you should let me know. Maybe once the gender roles get more solidified, they leave that out. But the promise to Hagar is that Yahweh will multiply her seed beyond all counting. And the words of the messenger to Hagar start out eerily similar to those to Mary about conceiving and bearing a son and what to name him. Does this give us pause? I had never noticed the similarities before. I hope some of you noticed it on your bulletin. Not quite Advent, but Ishmael's name is about Hagar's experience, the experience of a mistreated slave. Bring me back to another version again in the literal words, because Jehovah hath heard thy affliction. Sound familiar? I checked with Ron just to make sure. It's the same word as used when the people of Israel are in Egypt and the Lord has heard their affliction. The Lord hears the cries of the slaves. Yahweh sees Hagar and hears her affliction and is not blind to her suffering or deaf to her cries. This is incredible to her, as we'll see later when she speaks of her experience with God. The promise of who Ishmael will be does not seem all that great at first. A different translation is, he shall be as a wild ass among men. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell over against all his brethren. It doesn't sound like a great blessing to my middle-class American white ears. But the Lord is promising a freedom to Hagar's descendants that she herself will never taste. A wild ass among men is someone who will kick people when they need to, right? He will be free, he will be wild, and he will win in a way that Hagar never will. And somehow, that is enough promise for her to go back. The Lord knows that he is asking her to go back to a situation which is not going to be better, but it will save her life, and she will have a great nation, and they will be free. For Hagar, this is about being seen and heard, despite her lowly status as a woman, a foreigner, and a slave. The Lord searches her out and sees and hears her affliction. Being seen and heard by Yahweh, receiving God's promises for life and multiplication, is enough to give her strength to return. And so she speaks again.
And she called the name of the Lord who addressed her, Elroy, for she said, did I not go on seeing here after he saw me? Therefore is the well called Beer Lahairoi, which is between Kadesh and Bered.
Hagar gets to give the Lord a name, to name the experience and the well. Usually it's only the patriarchs who get to do that. And Yahweh is usually the one who names and renames. It's quite a departure. Names are important, or lack thereof. The naming of someone, the naming of the experience. Hagar gets to name the God who saw her. The experts are still trying to figure out a good translation for what she said. It's something to do with God seeing her, being truly seen, and her seeing God. Always a tricky matter. Being seen by Yahweh is a powerful antidote to being invisible to society. Her life matters. The God of the universe is also a personal God, Yahweh, who sees and searches for us, who has heard the cries of our past and has envisioned a future for us. And the end of the chapter is much different than the beginning. Kale.
And Hagar bore a son to Abram. And Abram called his son, whom Hagar had born, Ishmael. And Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abram.
A lot of word repetition here, but not by accident. Who is named? Who is left unnamed? Ishmael twice, Hagar three times, Abram's name four times. Though the chapter began with Sarai, in the end, it is just Hagar, Ishmael, and Abram. Sarah's time will come. The Lord has not forgotten her. But in this chapter, it is Hagar who bears a son to Abram, not to Sarai. Hagar, the Egyptian slave girl, has her chapter of naming and being heard and seen by God. And I really appreciate that the authors did not try to diminish this or clean it up or excise it. It's all there. There are a lot of perspectives in this chapter. Sometimes we are Sarai. Sometimes we are Abram. But today, perhaps we experience being Hagar. Each step of the way, realizing that God sees and hears, Yahweh searches and seeks to find us. He knows our past and envisions a future of hope and promise beyond what anyone else, even ourselves, can fathom. What will it mean to step into God's future, though the promises seem far off? This won't be the end for Hagar. Like Abram, like Sarah, as years go by and life is hard and painful, there are times when she wants to give up on the promise. It seems like a desert mirage. The promises seem slow to our sense of timing. To say that God takes the long view sometimes seems almost cruel. But God hears, God sees our affliction, and God pursues us and calls our name. Last Sunday, after our service and meal, I went out to the Esquire, as I usually do, to just have a little time before the Super Bowl. And Emmylou Harris came on singing, it seemed to me, in the voice of Hagar, a song called Orphan Girl. And Asha and Mark are going to come, and Asha's going to sing it for us, because as I heard it, I could hear her singing in a whole new way. And then, about 5 minutes later, the same song came on again. Now, I don't know how often you go out to restaurants, but usually they don't play the same song twice within 10 minutes. And I was like, okay, God, I hear you. We'll see what we can do. So I was really blessed that Asha agreed to sing for us today. So I'd appreciate if you would listen, hear the words of the Lord speaking to you, the unlikeliest, perhaps, of actors. Everyone is invited to the table. Maybe this will be your first time, your first chapter, as it was for Hagar. Maybe you've been there before. But these are the tables of the Lord, and the Lord invites you. Amen.
Highway, but I'll share my troubles if you. My father, my sister.